We are joined in the studio very shortly by the Jelly Bean Lady, and you can have a little chat to her on 13 13 32. Tonight we're talking about microwaves, magnets, mobile phones, and mumbo jumbo. There we go. Does magnetic therapy work? I tell you what, a lot of people have made money out of it. Whether or not it works is interesting, and it's a fairly new age sort of idea, isn't it? With feng shui and acupuncture, what sort of energy are the Chinese talking about? Well, they seem to have been doing it for quite some time. So we'll be taking your calls, and very shortly we will catch up with Dr. Steve Roberts, who has a PhD in chemistry and has enjoyed a career in both the UK and Australia as a code breaker for the British government and computer specialist and a scientist. Dr. Roberts was also a director of the scientific laboratory and now works with electronic security. He is the vice president of the Astronomy Society of Victoria, and his hobbies are astronomy, astrology, and UFOs. So we'll get Dr. Roberts on the phone very, very directly. Are you... Oh, you're in place. I can turn the microphone. There you are. Loretta's here.
Hello there, Steve. I was waiting for the music. Lollipop.
Turn her off. We don't want to hear that. Hang on. People are so demanding, these studio people. So demanding. Okay, well, I suppose, you know, your wish is my command. Here we go. There you go. You happy now? Your little song's over?
Oh, yes. I love that little song.
We're talking about magnets in the meantime. We'll be talking to Dr. Steve Roberts shortly. But you're a great believer in magnets, aren't you?
Oh, they're absolutely wonderful for sticking things on the fridge.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Oh. You don't believe in them?
Oh, it's not that I don't believe in them, but I actually have brought in the studio a little gas meter. I think I showed it to you at Christmas.
A gas meter?
Gas, G-A-U-S-S.
Oh, gas meter.
Gas meter, which measures magnetism. So I go into people's homes, well, I used to before they threw me out.
Yeah.
And I would measure the magnetism.
When they weren't home, she used to sneak in through the window.
That's right. Well, not quite. Lots of security on these days. And I would actually measure the magnetism over their underlays.
Uh-huh.
And it said zero. So,
you'd be a party pooper, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes, but that's
Do they
it.
Call you Loretta Killjoy?
Well, they do. Well, they've actually admitted they've been done by placebo, and I offer to do that for quite a lot of people, and I do demonstrations on it, and that's how I became the Jelly Bean Lady.
Oh, my goodness me. Let's welcome to the program Dr. Steve Roberts, who has a PhD in chemistry. You've been a code breaker. You've just about done it all. You're also president of the Astronomy Society of Victoria. Dr. Steve Roberts, welcome.
Oh, good evening.
Now, Loretta's just been disparaging magnetic therapy.
Yes.
You have a similar view.
Well, yes. I haven't actually seen the devices up close, but the magnetic field of these things is said to be very weak.
They certainly are. They're about 200, even though it says on the packages...
200 what?
Gauss. It says on the packages they're 1,050 or 950. I sat there and measured all 256 to find that they were half the strength that they were claimed to be. But if you just get a couple of inches above, there's nothing there anyway. So
yeah, they'll actually lose their feel if they get banged around a bit. You know, they'll demagnetise with time.
What about if you had a couple of those U-Butte magnets you could get out of old speakers?
That would be good, but it would actually it wouldn't actually affect your body at all. But it would play havoc with your domestic arrangements. It would wipe your computer hard disk and.
I thought that might work.
Sorry,
that
Steve.
A great discovery then.
But I worked when I did my PhD in chemistry. I worked with a whacking great magnet that banged out 23,000 Gauss, and I sat next to it for 5 years.
Gauss is a unit of what?
Magnetic field strength.
Magnetic field strength. Just wanted to
The Earth's field is about half a Gauss.
Mm-hmm.
It varies from place to place, but it's about 0.3 to 0.7 of a Gauss, depending where you are on the Earth. And I sat next to a magnet, which was the machine that's now called MRI. It was called NMR in those days.
So between the two of you, you think that this is a con, really?
If somebody's charging money for it, it's a con. I mean, if it's free, it's not a con. But the thought that magnets affect the human body is basically a con.
What about could it be this placebo effect?
Yes. I mean, the placebo effect is very powerful. So, you know, this is the effect where if you think you're getting better, then you do get better. And when the scientists do trials of, say, some new drug, you know, they administer doses of it to some patients, and they administer some other sugar pills or something to more patients and tell them it's the drug, and about 70% of those get better. If there's a 50-50 chance, you know, then some proportion of the people who aren't getting the drug get better anyway.
From magnets to microwaves, they can be harmful, can't they?
Yes, microwaves basically rattle the water molecules. They rattle the oxygen and hydrogen bonded water molecules, and they basically heat up water if it's within the range of the microwaves, which is how food is warmed up. It has to be food that contains water.
That's because what it picks up the frequency of the
microwave is radiation at the frequency of the bond in a water molecule.
Is that altogether safe?
It's not very safe at all if you put your body in it.
No, well, I wasn't suggesting that. But is it safe to eat microwave food?
Oh, perfectly, yeah. I mean, it doesn't change the food at all except to heat up the water content of the food. But there's no other radiation involved. What was cold, wet food becomes hot, wet food.
It's probably more efficient than boiling water, because when you think about water bubbling away with your carrots in it, it's rattling away and vibrating everything in there and taking a lot of nutrition out. So to me, it would be a bit healthier.
Yeah, well, because if you boil carrots in a pan, there's a lot of water involved. It obviously takes longer to heat up, and you need more heat to do it. And then some of the chemicals from the carrots end up in the water, which gets thrown away.
Yeah, so it's a type of vibrational energy, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The molecules rattle around in... actually, the form of heat in the carrot is actually molecules rattling around. They're more or less in place, but they vibrate. And if you make them vibrate more, the carrot heats up, basically.
Well, why don't we just put a crystal next to your carrot? Because that comes out with vibrational energy.
A crystal has its own frequencies of vibrational energy, which would be different to the vibrational energy of water.
Oh, right.
So you can put a crystal in the microwave and it might or might not heat up.
It might explode.
It might not really efficiently, it might not do anything at all. It probably wouldn't do anything at all.
One thing that a lot of people don't seem to know is you shouldn't put metal objects in microwave, should you?
Oh, yeah. Don't sue me if you get this wrong. It's to do with a circuit being induced in the metal.
Yeah, that's because I was at some friend's place the other day and a little one was microwaving some pasta, and I could hear this. She had a fork in there. I could hear this little crackling sound. I thought, gee, that's a familiar sound because I've done it before myself.
Yeah.
So I quickly went over and turned it off and took the fork, which had a metal metal base to it, and told her not to do it again.
Well, I've done that with a plate with gold on it, and it made a bit of a mess of the gold.
Yeah, it would. I mean, basically, the microwaves induce a current in anything metal put in there, or anything which conducts. Most food doesn't conduct, so it doesn't really occur. But if you put it in a little tin dish with those crimped up edges, you get on takeaway food.
Mm.
So you get currents going all over the metal, and the dangerous bit is at the edge where there's bits of metal near other bits but not quite touching, and a spark will jump across.
Uh-huh.
It's got a spectacular effect, and the most spectacular effect is how I destroy combat discs. You know, when I have a business that handles lots of confidential information, you end up with a CD that you want to destroy physically.
Mm-hmm.
And you stick it in the microwave, basically, and it's a spectacular show. It lasts about 2 or 3 seconds, and the disc just, you know, is completely destroyed, and it's great fun to do. But
The microwave doesn't blow up?
No.
I'll try that tonight when I get home at midnight.
The oven doesn't like it much, but, you know, it makes its microwaves, and the CD just is destroyed. It's great fun, but don't do it with a valuable CD, a music CD. Do it with those 30-cent ones you have for computers.
Yes, indeed. Well, listen, Doctor, we'll keep you online there and take a little break, and we'll come back and we'll talk about mobile phones, how good they are, and some of the adverse effects they may have. On News Talk 1116, Brisbane's 4BC, it is 23 to 8. Steve Andrews.
On Brisbane's News Talk 1116,
4BC. 13:32 till 8 o'clock for Jelly Bean Lady, and our special guest is Dr. Steve Roberts. Doctor, just before we go to mobile phones and their possible downsides, negative side effects, I should say, Loretta, you've got some information on Reiki.
Yes, well, after the last time we had Dr. Roberts on, I got a whole lot of questions to do with healing energies, and one that I thought was quite interesting was, if you're in, you know, at number one Smith Street in Belfast and you want to send a Reiki healing energy wave, what kind of technology would you use? To me, in a hospital bed, say, because that's happened to me. My cousin sent me a Reiki healing message, and I thought, oh, how could I do that by technology?
Doctor, the floor is yours.
By technology, well, it's really amazingly hard. Radiation sort of spreads out in a sphere from the point of origin, so if you generate any kind of energy in Belfast, it will dissipate fairly quickly, unless you sort of bang it down a wire or something. And
oh, no, they don't use a wire.
Well, they don't use a wire. You can send a sort of directed beam to satellites, but it's actually... The beam still goes out in the sphere, but it's more or less focused. The satellite re-energizes, and well, you see the size of a satellite dish for collecting the signal. It's like, you know, 90 feet across. The signals are extremely weak, so you really can't get any kind of substantial energy, not enough to feel in the human body, nowhere near.
And you might need a GPS system to pick me up at, you know, Ward 6C, the third bed on the right.
I think you'd have a job just getting energy across a room that a human body could feel. I mean,
well, does that mean...
throwing objects, you know, if you start an infrared heater up, you can feel the heat across the room. And when you go, say, two rooms away, it's rather a pathetic sort of warming, and so on, you know, further and further away. It'll be the same kind of effect with the Reiki energy as well.
Well, you love your astronomy. You haven't seen any Reiki satellites up there?
Reiki satellites? Well, there should be some, and they could beam healing energy down all over the world.
Now, wouldn't that be great?
Well, wouldn't that be wonderful?
World would be a better place. Now, speaking of your love for astronomy, have you seen any UFOs lately?
Oh, yeah. I've only seen the UFO once. I'm actually the sceptic spokesman on UFOs and other sort of things like that. The UFO phenomenon sort of gone rather passe lately since the 50th anniversary of Roswell, which was nearly 10 years ago. It's been a bit of a laughing stock, and there's been very few sightings, and those that have been rather pathetic and fairly mundane phenomena.
What about the Min Min lights?
The Min Min lights, yeah, they were observed in 1954 in Queensland, near a place called Min Min, and it's thought to be methane or the gas that's catching fire. It's known in more soggy places like Britain. There's a phenomenon known as, you know, marsh gas, which is methane basically, which actually can catch fire. You can sort of see sort of little blue flames flickering over a swamp sometimes, and it's rather spooky. I would imagine it'd be rather spooky, but Min Min lights are thought to be that.
But there's no conclusive evidence, is there?
Well, I've never seen a film of it or anything, but people swear blind. Some people swear blind that they've seen it happen, and that there's this explanation available. So that seems to be adequate.
Now, back to the question at hand. Mobile phones are very, very good and very effective and very handy. However, what effect will a mobile phone have when it's next to your ear and you're chatting away for long periods of time? Surely it must have some heating effect of the brain.
Well, there's first of all the actual heat from the phone. The mobile phone does get fairly warm after some minutes' use. That's just the effect that you get from having something warm next to your ear, which hasn't really been a problem before. I mean, people stand too close to the fire and they get on the side of their body nice and warm, and people like to do that, and nobody's ever been told off for doing it. So the heating effect is obviously a thing that the body can tolerate. The other effect will be from the radiation from the phone, or the signals going to the phone. The phone being near the brain rather than near the ear in this case is a matter of concern. And the jury's been out on this one since mobile phones were invented, but there's never been a study that shows there's anything bad happening.
And certainly...
I think there was one in Sweden recently that said there might be something going on, but
You really need an independent study. You couldn't get somebody like Nokia or Motorola to do it because
I think getting cigarette companies to look into
lung cancer.
Those guys might fund studies, but yeah, you bet your life they've got a handle on the scientists who are doing it. Well, if you work it out, the radiation is not that much from a mobile phone. It's actually not very strong compared to other forms of radiation you'd be picking up just walking down the street or walking around. The radiation from the phone itself is the most significant problem. The radiation to the phone is nothing, but you're standing in the sort of atmosphere that all the time anyway, coming from the towers.
What about when you have those earpieces? When you're driving along, as you are required to by law, or have a car.
There's no problem with that. It's only sound that goes into the ear, and the effect is only the effect of having sound in the ear.
Okay, so if you turn it up too loud, radiation's over.
There's no radiation from an earpiece. It's only the sound.
Okay.
The big hassle with that is, of course, if you have both ears bunged up, you can't hear people hooting at you. But people have done studies on, you know, can you play the radio in cars? Can you play the radio too loud?
Doctor, we have a caller for you online. It is Abraham from Holland Park. Your question for the doctor.
I'm just a bit concerned. I've got a low-set house, and I have approximately in each room a smoke alarm, so that brings it up to a total of 13 smoke alarms. And so I'm just concerned, is there any concerns with regard to radiation?
No, there wouldn't be, but 13 smoke alarms as well, there were lots, but, the more the better. Now, actually, the smoke alarm is the only thing in the house which is radioactive. So there's a tiny amount of americium in a smoke detector, which ionizes the air nearby and can detect if there's smoke in the air. It's not an amount that would be significant, even with 13 alarms, it would not be significant to actually affect the human body.
So what I hear you saying, Doctor, is it doesn't emit radiation?
A
slight amount?
It actually does, but on a very limited scale, and it's only a small amount of material, and it only emits it for a matter of centimetres.
Oh, okay.
But if you
so possibly your television would emit more radiation.
Oh yeah, the television would blast apart from the sound and light. Televisions emit all sorts of radio frequency radiations all around the room, and there's a much it'd be much more worth studying the effects of that than the effects of mobile phones.
Abraham, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thanks again.
Good on you. Thanks for your call. Yeah, that's quite fascinating. I didn't know that. I must put some smoke alarms up in my place.
But don't put them under your pillow, that's all.
No, I won't be doing that at all.
But then the old days, the watches and all those, iridescent-looking clocks that you could look at night.
The old paint that glowed green in the dark had uranium in it.
Did it really?
Yeah, that was a very significant source of radioactivity. And there still is in the form of false teeth. You know, false teeth are slightly greenish tinge sometimes, and it's due to uranium in the teeth. And because they're in your head near the brain, you know, there's a far greater source of radioactivity there than anything else you need to worry about.
You're listening to News Talk 1116 Brisbane's 4BC. On the phone is Dr. Steve Roberts, who has a PhD in chemistry and has had a varied career in both Australia and the United Kingdom, including being a codebreaker for the British government, a computer specialist and a scientist, and also the jelly bean lady. Loretta is here. Now, Doctor, you mentioned uranium. You're a great supporter of uranium as an alternative for power.
Yes, obviously there are hazards with all methods of generating power, but with nuclear power, the hazards are much easier to control, and the amount of nuclear waste generated is actually very small and can be handled very easily. There are other methods of power, especially fossil fuels, which is used to the waste being spread all over the landscape, carbon dioxide and ash, and so on, with other methods, with alternative methods such as solar and wind power, they are very cute and they should be pursued, but it has to be, sunny or windy respectively to be able to exploit those. So you really need some kind of power method that you can turn on and off, which really means burning coal or oil or gas or nuclear power.
What effect would it have in terms of global warming?
The argument of the various parties fiddle with the figures. From actually operating a nuclear power station, there's no global warming at all. there's far more effect from burning the fuels. But the opponents of nuclear power point out that to actually make the nuclear power station, you have to make, you know, steel pieces and concrete and do construction work, which itself produces a carbon effect. There is some mileage in that, but the same logic also applies to making a coal-fired power station.
The thing that I guess worries a lot of people is the waste. What happens if the waste gets out?
Well, there's hardly any waste. Everybody sort of worries about nuclear waste. It's only about one container full for 10 years of the really hot stuff, and that's very easy to manage compared to the waste from a coal station, which is like 14,000 tons a day, you know, which has to be got rid of somewhere. You're looking at, you know, a matter of, you know, a few kilograms a week or something. The waste wouldn't generally get out. It would be buried below ground rather than above ground. And,
but it takes 10 thousands of years, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, the half-life of plutonium, one of the isotopes, is a quarter of a million years, which means that after a quarter of a million years, it's half as active as it is now.
Mm.
But the other side of the coin is it means it's not very active. If it's going to take half a million years to decompose halfway, there's not much decomposing going on. The half-life of carbon 13, for example, is 5,700 years, and there's other things which decay in a matter of seconds.
What's the difference in, forgive my ignorance on this one, the difference with what happened in Maralinga in the 50s? What did they, the British bombed Maralinga? It was a test, was it an atom bomb test?
Mm.
And how does that vary from nuclear?
I've never actually heard Maralinga brought up in this argument before. But
no, but I digress, but I'm just trying to draw a parallel.
It was an atomic explosion above ground, and various countries were doing it. The Russians and the Americans were doing it, and the British having a smaller island than most people, they're coming to visit our island with it. the bombs are fairly dirty. The ones over Hiroshima, the first ones, were
so
more dirty than anybody thought.
Different composition to uranium.
Oh yeah, a different amount of energy. You're letting a lot of energy off under uncontrolled conditions, really, with an atom bomb, and you get all sorts of bizarre isotopes being formed. Some reactions can occur under those conditions that wouldn't occur in a nuclear power station. And when you get temperatures of 20 million degrees centigrade and huge pressures and so on involved, you can get reactions happening which really wouldn't happen in a nuclear power station.
Back to uranium and the terrible thing that happened in Chernobyl. How old was Chernobyl, and could something like that actually happen again?
Yeah, it's interesting to bring that one up. As people keep pointing it out, and Three Mile Island before that. Chernobyl only killed about 50-something people.
About 59 people.
59, yeah. Mostly used a figure of 23.
But did it not blame for neighbouring countries?
Yes, but it hasn't actually killed anybody on the sort of scale that the alarmists make out.
But at the same time, it could, bring on cancer, couldn't it?
No. If it could, it was 20 years ago. If it could, there'd be a substantial set of figures by now showing a whole increase of death and illnesses from cancer.
But those are the official. Whose figures are they? The 59.
Well, it depends who you listen to. I mean, the Russians.
The Russians might tell you that it's 59, but real statistics might be much higher.
It was about 23 killed on the day, and a couple of dozen more died from radiation burns and so on. And actually, you have to think even this was due to the Russians, the communist Russians' way of managing things, you know, herding troops in at gunpoint to do it.
Now, I found the person, Leslie Kemeny, Australian Foundation member of the International Nuclear Energy Academy, visiting professional research fellow and a consulting nuclear engineer and physicist. He was the one. I've got his perspective here, talking about the number of people that died. But the other option is, if we go to green power, I was looking at a DVD from Professor Colin Kay, and he said if you wanted to put alternate power to Sydney, you would need 1,200 square kilometres of solar panels or 44,600 kilowatt turbines.
Yeah, you would.
You'd be pretty busy building.
And that's at 100% efficiency. So, you know, we might think there's a bit of room out there in Australia to put 1,200 square kilometres of solar panels.
There's also hazards with coal mining, to put it mildly, and I've got a chip on my shoulder about this because I come from a coal mining family long ago, and it's just bloody dangerous. And the hazard of nuclear power, absolutely nothing compared to the known and ongoing hazards of coal mining, especially in China at the moment. But in Britain, they've stopped doing coal mining because it was too darn dangerous.
Well, in Denmark, they've stopped building wind farms because their power was the most expensive in Europe. But apparently, they still make the turbines to sell them overseas because they're world leaders in this technology. So they're probably heading to Tasmania.
Yeah, they're quite good. Turbines are quite sexy. The problem the Danes had is that the Swedes and Germans have wind farms as well. So when it's windy, there's plenty of power to generate, but there was more power than they wanted. They had to get rid of it to the Swedes and the Germans, who didn't really want it at the time. When it wasn't windy, they had to buy power in from Sweden mostly, which is Sweden's actually a heavily nuclear powered country.
Oh yes, very efficient.
The federal government has moved to this idea of uranium and nuclear power. How far would you say, as somebody with a PhD in chemistry and a great knowledge of nuclear power, how far down the track do you think it'll be before we can rely on and will use nuclear energy?
Right now we can rely on and use it right now. It's only a political issue. There's been so much alarmism over it. The energy's been tried out. There are safe forms of reactor. I mean, the type of reactor used at Chernobyl was not one that anybody else has. The Canadians make a good reactor, can do, and there's other things. It's available right now, and you know, we're burning fossil fuels all the way through. And
yeah, that's obviously
really the sooner we get on with it, better. It takes a while to build stations to get them up to speed.
Would you be happy to have one, you know, next summer?
Yes, I would. I've stood on the top of I've actually stood on the pile of a nuclear reactor.
Mm-hmm.
The whole of my family. Not a big deal. You can stand on the pile. You know, you don't glow in the dark much. I'd be very happy to, you know, shepherd some nuclear waste or have a power station in my backyard. And I don't really see it as a big deal compared to having a coal mine, especially. You know,
there's more radioactive dumped in the gases. I mean, the smoke from coal mining.
A coal-fired power station produces 14,000 tons of ash a day.
There's radioactivity in that too.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the ash itself is very slightly radioactive. It actually contains uranium. And it's only about, you know, a millionth of a percent uranium, but in 14,000 tons, that's like a, you know, quite a few bucketfuls of radioactive uranium which are in it. And it turns out actually that the amount of radiation produced in the form of the ash being trucked out of the power station really exceeds any of the waste that a nuclear power station would.
So the nuclear power tongue firm cheek doctor, nuclear power station wouldn't be like The Simpsons. Probably
no.
Homer wouldn't be in charge of Springfield or anything.
It's a great metaphor, and I think they were doing something like that at Chernobyl when it went wrong. They were patting around with the safety procedures and seeing what would happen, you know. It's a great metaphor. Homer with his piece of green stuff, he's off, you know. Never mind safety regulations.
That's exactly right.
I like the fish with the three eyes. I watched that one.
It's funny, but probably not very close to the truth. Doctor, it's been a wonderful pleasure to have you on with you, and thank you so much for your time.
And thank you, Dr. Roberts.
No worries.
We've been chatting with Dr. Steve Roberts, who has a PhD in chemistry and has a varied career. He has enjoyed being a computer specialist, a code breaker for the British government. I don't think you ever broke a code, did you? Or?
No, I can neither confirm nor deny any of this.
It was a laundry list, and you're sticking to that story.
It was a laundry list. It was just Vladimir so-and-so's phone number.
The Vinci yarn and that stuff.
That's what
it was.
It
was a long time ago.
It was you who wrote that book. I'm going to tell the Vatican. Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Stephen, and we'll talk soon, hey?
Yeah, good night.
Good night. Dr. Steve Roberts joining us there from Melbourne as we come to the end of that's a fascinating yarn, actually.
I was going to mention that if
Please
you put
so.
In Jelly Bean Lady and Video in Google, you'll get a DVD or a video of a presentation I did at Bond Uni, and it's currently
and
in the last
in no
3 weeks.
Time.
Yes, it's had 550 people look at it.
Is that right?
But if you're worried about
nothing
rubbers,
on TV
spiders,
that night.
Snakes and magnets, you know, it might not be your cup of tea, but it's quite entertaining. And don't forget www.healthinformation.com.au.
Thank you, Loretta. Lovely to have had your company over the past 4 weeks. Tony will be back next week. And Dr. Joe coming in next
week?
Yes,
she is. Yes, and we're talking about aches and pains and arthritis.
Oh, yes, this time of year. Very, very pertinent. Thank you so much for your time, Loretta.